Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Wayne Gast from Maryland. Wayne is an avid bow hunter and owns Lethal Injection Outdoors, an online hunting show. And the cool thing about Wayne is he lives in the state of Maryland, and Maryland certainly isn't a state known for holding big bucks, and Maryland is kind of a hidden gem in my opinion. He killed an awesome buck in velvet in the early season, and I was able to hunt Maryland many years ago with Sitka gear, and I realized then that it really was this hidden gem. The Eastern Shore and much of the state can hold some pretty good bucks. So we're going to talk about the buck that he killed and several other large bucks that he's heard about that have been taken in the state of Maryland. He's going to talk about leasing ground and how just reasonably priced it is to hunt in the state of Maryland. I was pleasantly surprised when I hunted there to find out how inexpensive it is to hunt with an outfitter. But before we get started, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. Wayne was able to film his hunt with a Fourth Arrow camera arm. Windscent, Morel Targets, Huntworth Clothing, Pine Ridge Archery, Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads. Wayne killed his buck with a Grim Reaper. Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, Illinois Connection, an awesome outfitter in Illinois, Outdoorsman's. They make great tripods and backpacks for the hardcore hunter and wilderness athlete. If you're tired of sugary drinks and you want to shed a few pounds, check out wildernessathlete.com. They make a great drink called Hydrate and Recover. If you enter Drop 10 at checkout, you can get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Wayne on the show. Welcome to the show, Wayne. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're in the middle of the rut here in Maryland. So that's a good time of year.
There you go. You're chasing them around still, huh?
Always chasing them. Always chasing something here in Maryland. That's what it seems like, at least.
Must have an understanding family.
Definitely.
Well, today we want to talk about what we would call an early season buck that you killed this year. And when people think of, you know, good quality bucks, to be honest, probably one of the last states people think of is the state of Maryland. But yet you seem to be able to do it regularly. So we want to kind of break down the buck you were able to kill this year. What do you think that buck end up scoring?
I'm thinking around 145, maybe give or take a little bit, maybe a little bit more. That was just a rough score on him. He's a big deer, mature deer. He weighed 177 dressed. So okay. He had a real nice body on him, too.
And, you know, for the average Joe out there to kill a 140, 150 buck, let's face it, that's a dream for most guys. And I think what makes the story unique is you were able to kill him on a really small parcel. How big a parcel were you hunting on?
I was hunting on 12 acres at that point in time. And it's a piece of property where I actually live at. And since 99, I've been there and kind of tried to manage it. I think at first, when I first moved in there, just like anything else, you want to go in there and scout it out and figure things out. And I went down and put a bunch of stands up. And for the first couple of years, I really think I was hunting wrong. I had taken some does out of there. And I noticed that every time I would go down in there, I was pushing deer out and onto the neighbor's property and things like that. And then all of a sudden I got smart one day and I was like, you know, maybe you should hunt less of the property and utilize more of the property. So I kind of let where they were bedding at just grow up more and more over the years and didn't disturb it, and kind of figured out two travel corridors where they were kind of one on the front of the piece of property and one on the back of the people's property where they were going in and out of into this bedding area, and kind of utilized that and started honing in and focusing more on getting the deer in this transition zone right as they came out of that bedding area. And it started to become real successful for me hunting it like that instead of always putting pressure on the deer and pushing down in there. So I hunted it actually smarter than harder.
Sure. Now, how big a bedding area are you talking out of the 13 acres?
Ooh. We got a little spot cleared where the house is and where the driveway comes up through. So I would say a good 2/3 of it is just strictly sanctuary for them to go into where they're not disturbed. Because I got the house kind of on one side of it, and I'm hunting these two different areas where they come out of that 2/3 to go down into where the farms are and things like that to feed.
Okay. So is your property surrounded by other big parcels of property?
Not too big. A lot of them right in the general vicinity are kind of the same. There's a horse farm down the bottom, which has a little more acreage. Everybody around there seems to be on a 12 to probably 15 acre parcel. And then once you get out of that little area that I'm in, there's a creek bed that flows down through there where there's nothing built on, where a lot of times these deers are using as a travel corridor. And there's a lot of just land that's kind of undisturbed, where people either don't hunt it, or if they do hunt it, they're kind of doing the same thing I am and not disturbing a lot of the land. And then as you get up the road a little bit, it opens up into ag fields and things like that.
Okay. Okay. So kind of suburbia, but not really. You know, you have kind of the best of both worlds, so to speak.
Correct. Yeah. They're big lots that everybody in that general area lives on. And like I said, it's a lot of hardwoods, acorns, things like that, creek bottom flowing through there. And then right up the street, it opens into a ton of agriculture and lots of cornfields and things like that up the road.
Now, any food plots on your property?
I have planted stuff there. Did some stuff with some clover, small, like throw and grow type things. I tilled it up before and used some radishes. I planted them. They did pretty good. Have some minerals that I've put out. And I planted some apple trees a long time ago that have done okay. They don't get a lot of sun, so it's kind of weird. But the food plots have done pretty good to kind of slow the deer down in this little staging area that I'm hunting.
Okay. So I guess, you know, let's tell the story, you know, of that buck and the way you hunt this small parcel. You know, you mentioned you had a couple shooter bucks to me earlier when I talked to you. You had a couple shooter bucks on camera this year. Go ahead and tell the story.
So the season in Maryland, it opens pretty early. It used to open around September 16th and September 15th, and they moved that up. And now it opens September 6th, which gives us a pretty good opportunity to see deer in velvet and actually get a deer in velvet. And that is something that I had never done before. I killed a lot of good deer and I passed on a lot of deer in velvet because I'd never seen a deer that was actually the caliber of something I wanted to kill that was actually still in velvet. And hunting there, the place I'm hunting, it's kind of weird because I have the does there year round, but the bucks, they like to be there in the summertime, and there's a small window. It's almost like 1 week window that you have to catch these deer in velvet moving through there. Because once the velvet dries up, the bachelor groups split up. It's kind of like their whole pattern changes. And then I won't see those bucks move through that area again until this time of year, till pre-rut type time, when they're actually coming in to check on those does that they know are always constantly in that area. So the season prior, I had two shooters moving through. One was a 9-point and one was a real nice mature 7, palmed out, really nice mass. And they were moving through. I had them going through there like clockwork. And a week before the season, it was like they disappeared off the face of the earth. And I did not see that real massed out 7 again until, like I said, around the rut. It was the end of last October, pre-rut time, and I was able to shoot that buck last year, but not in velvet. I wasn't able to get on him in velvet. That was done and gone right after that first week. So this year, I had my hopes up to see a decent deer in there, but it was the same thing. I felt like there's such a small window that I have to deal with that I had to get it done in that first week. Otherwise, the patterns and everything was going to change. And I had recently started using a Spartan camera that sends the pictures to my phone. Okay. And I had nine different deer over the summertime, nine different bucks, anywhere from a really wide six, a seven that was moving through there, two eights, some younger bucks, the same nine that I had seen the season prior. He really blew up. And now this 10 had shown up, and he was a really nice deer as well. So I had my eye on this nine and this 10. And these nine bucks were in and out of there at different times. And a lot of them I'd see for 3 and 4 days at a time on the camera. They'd bed down in there. They'd come up. They'd move through the transition zone and then go down out where the creek bottom is and things like that out to feed. And while I was excited to see them, still in the back of my mind, I still had that same thing going on that in years past, because it was like I was always seeing really good bucks in velvet, but never could connect with one. So the morning, opening morning, I had taken off work. It was September 6th. And I was considering letting out there. I got up early and I was getting dressed and my phone went off. And I had a picture on the Spartan camera, and these does are moving down in there already. And I'm like, well, I'm not going in there. So I called my buddy up and I told him I was going to go at this other piece of property we had about 20 minutes up the road. Did he want to go with me? And he had wanted to go. He wanted to run the camera that day. So we went up the road. And as I'm driving up the road, the phone buzzes again. And here are the 7 points going in. And it's still dark. And here's the 10 point. I got two pictures of him that morning going into the bedding area. So we went up the road and hunted. And I don't even remember what I saw that morning, because I don't even think I was thinking about it. I'm thinking about him being down in that bedding area, and the odds of him coming back out that same way are pretty good, because that's what he had did on September 5th, the day before. He had came out of the bedding area, and I had daytime pictures of him around 6:50, 7 o'clock the day before coming up out of that bedding area. And I hunted the morning, but it was all I could do to get back to the house and kind of check the wind direction and see if I was going to go in there on him. And I told my buddy who was filming me, I said, he's in there. I said, he's in there bedded down, and he's going to come back out. And I had one stand set up in there. It's a hang-on stand with ladder stick going up to it. And he said, well, let's go in there, hang another stand. I'll film you. And it's a wild cherry tree that I'm in. It's not very big. And I said, I think I'm just going to go in by myself and self-film it, because I didn't want to screw anything up. I didn't want two of us to be in there. I didn't want anything to change and kind of risk getting busted, because, like I said, it's a small window where these deer are in velvet in Maryland that early season. And if you can connect with them that first week, you're doing something. And if not, then you might have to change your whole scheme of things on how you're hunting them to connect with them before the rut comes in and they go into a totally different pattern. So I had got in there early. I knew he was down in there. I got in there, set the fourth arrow camera arm up, got everything situated. And man, I think I was quieter getting in that tree stand than I've ever been in my whole life. I didn't make one noise that I don't know how I was so quiet. I mean, I'm good at being quiet, but I swear I was set up and I was in full stealth mode. And I sat down and I checked the wind, and the wind was moving perfect still. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Now tell me, you're tiptoeing around. How far away do you think that buck was bedded from, you know, where your tree stand was?
Less than 100.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, because it gets real thick real fast in there. And I'm right on the edge of it. I got everything set up, totally quiet. And I'm sitting there, and a couple hours goes past, because I had got in there probably 2 o'clock, and it's still daylight till 7:30, 8 o'clock at night that time of year. So I'm sitting there, and the does start filtering up through the same ones that went down in the morning. Here come the does filtering up through, and they come up into that little transition zone, and they're hanging around, and I got where I had the stuff planted before and the little apple trees out there, and they're kind of meandering around and they hang out a little while. And I don't want them to hang out too long, because I don't want them to turn around and see me up there. You know how those are. They seem to like to bust quicker than a buck will. And sure, they kind of hung around a little bit and went on about their business and went down the hill down towards where the little creek bottom flows up through. and he disappeared over the hill. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, first one's through. A little while later, young buck comes up. I think he was a spiker, might have been a 3-point. And I'm filming a little bit, kind of does the same thing as the does and filters down the hill the same way they did. And it's getting a little bit later, probably after 6. And here comes the 7-point up that I knew had been hanging around the Big Ten. And 7 still in velvet, kind of comes up and he does his thing. And I see him start looking back down in the woods. And at that point in time, I'm like, all right, your buddy's coming up now. Because those two, it was weird because a lot of the other bucks I saw, a lot of the 2-8s and a lot of them were hanging together. I'd see 4 and 5 at a time. But this buck, he didn't hang around with anybody but this 1 7-point. He kind of was the only deer I ever saw him with on the trail camera pictures over the summer. And when that 7 come up and started looking back down in the woods, I knew it was a pretty good chance that the 10 was what was going to come up next. So I'm sitting there self-filming. I'm filming the 7-point. And next thing I know, I see something coming up through the woods, pull the binoculars up, and here comes the 10. And he steps out, and right in front of the vitals, as you'll see if you get to watch the video once I get it edited, these vines are hanging right in front of his vitals. So I got him dead broadside, 20 yards, with all kind of stuff hanging right in front of the vitals. And I'm kind of waiting for him to take one step forward. And it was a funny situation because same stand, back up 1 year prior, the 9-point I was talking about that I saw this year, I had him in the same situation. And down over the hill, somebody started making a bunch of noise. And they was actually shooting a gun down there. It sounded like a 22 or something. And I have footage of the deer. And you can see him like standing there flinching this 9-point from the year prior. And he kind of turns, does this total 180 move and goes back down the hill towards the bedding area. And I never did get a chance at that deer again. And this deer is up in that same position. And I hear this huge, it sounds like a diesel truck or tractor or something coming down the road. And I'm
deja vu.
Yes. I'm thinking, do not go anywhere. Cause now I got a bigger deer in velvet standing here and I don't need him to turn around and beeline back down. And all in one motion, I got the footage of it. He kind of comes out, loops back around, and before I could do anything, he's back, headed down towards the thicket. And I'm like, oh, my God, don't tell me that this deer's not going to step out and give me a shot. After he was standing here for a couple minutes with vines and things like that blocking the vitals. So I look, and the 7, I think, kind of calmed him down because the 7 starts moving around a little bit more. And it's funny, I got the arm pushed out as far as I can because I physically can't see him where he's standing behind some stuff, but I know he's still standing there. So I got the camera arm pushed out, and I'm looking at the viewing screen on the camera, and I'm looking at the back of him still standing there. So the camera's kind of doing the job for me. I'm using it as my surveillance device sitting here, and I'm just sitting still as can be waiting for him to turn. And it seemed like forever. But on the video, it ended up being about 5 minutes, which felt like 20. He kind of turns and starts moving back out across, and he's going to come up where that 7 is. Swung the camera arm back. I was looking at the screen. I had it right where I knew he was going to step into. And he came right into this opening, stopped dead broadside. He's probably 15 yards away. I'm at full draw, put the Grim Reaper to work. I watch him go off in the arrows embedded in his opposite shoulder, arrow breaks off in the air, and I immediately hear him crashing. And I kind of, as you'll see on the video, I just sit there for a minute and don't know what to do because it was like a slam dunk shot. And I'm thinking to myself, could that deer have went down that fast? And I kind of got my composure, got myself together, and got down, and I went up to the house and got my wife, and I was like, I got him. I said, and I'm pretty sure he's down really, really close. So I got her to film the recovery for me, and I get the arrow, and you can see a good bit of it was broke off in him. I had the Reaper stuck up in the opposite shoulder there. Hit him dead broadside quartering away, and he had went probably 7 yards out and 10 yards down to where those other deer go off the top of the hill. Never made it off the hill. His rack's just sitting there in velvet, caught up in some vines. And he's just laying there 17 yards from where I shot him. Just
awesome.
Yes, it was just amazing. And I didn't want to stop him. I hate, like, when deer are out there. I feel like it's a lot of times that you got a deer walking, and I didn't want to stop him that first time, because it's like, if you grunt at him or try to make a sound at him, it puts him on high alert. And I feel like then when you shoot, they could duck your arrow and things like that. And it just happened that I didn't even need to slow him down. He stepped out and stopped right in that opening, right on film, and I was able to bury that Grim Reaper broadhead right in behind that shoulder. And I'm telling you, within 17 yards, it did its job, and he was done.
That's awesome. Now tell me, how old do you think he is?
I'm thinking 4.5. Could okay. be 5.5. I think 4.5. He had a really big body. A lot of the bucks I have killed that have the same caliber racks, really nice racks. The heaviest deer I ever killed in Maryland was probably dressed 150 pounds. And this deer weighed 177 dressed. So he had a really big, I'm thinking at least 4.5, that he was at least 4.5 years old.
And you had never seen this deer, you'd never shown up before this year.
Not before this year. No. I had a 9 and some other ones and some other deer in the area, but not this buck. He showed up this season.
So that just goes to show you, even with a small parcel, you never know, what you're going to pull in. With those does hanging around in your bedding area every year, is a new year, and you can pull in a different shooter from one year to the next that you've never seen before in your life.
Yep, definitely. I've killed, since 99, I've taken four really good bucks out of there, and all of them have been a couple years apart, except for these last two. I shot the one last year that was a real nice palmed out 7-point. He was missing one brow tine, so it made him a 7. He was mainframe 8 and then missing a brow tine. And I really attribute that to actually really starting to hunt the area a lot smarter and putting out the minerals and some things like that for him, just to slow them down a little bit in that transition zone that they were already using. So I just made use of their natural travel patterns and kind of let them have their bedding area. Instead of taking that away from them and pushing them out of there, I let them have that bedding area, and then they use that, and then I just catch them on the way out of there and don't put as much pressure on them that way. And then using the Spartan camera as a type of reconnaissance, you know what I mean? To know kind of what's going on in the area, I can disturb it even less.
Sure. Now, do you hunt a minimal amount of days then on your property? Everything's got to be right, wind, all those kind of things.
Yes.
What's the maximum amount of days that you're hunting that parcel during deer season?
And that's something else too. I used to hunt that spot a lot more. I've only hunted it 2 times this year. I hunted it that first day, and then I hunted it one more time since the rut's been going on. It was a pre-rut time. I was getting the Spartan camera. I was getting a really decent 8-point that had been moving through, and I wanted to get a better look at him. And he was hanging around for a couple of days, and the wind was good once again. And I went in there, and he looked probably be a 2.5-year-old deer. He's got really good potential. And I ended up not shooting him, ended up passing on him and kind of letting him grow to let him get to that next level and kind of utilize this area like the other deer have been. So I've started hunting other spots up the street and other places we have to hunt instead of putting a bunch of pressure there. Like you said, I wait till the wind's right and then use that camera to my advantage to kind of tell me what's in the area and what's been moving through lately.
What happened to the other buck that was with him?
The 7?
Yeah, I mean, is he still around?
I got pictures of him a couple days after that. That big 9 that was in velvet came back that evening after I didn't disturb the area at all because he didn't run back down in the bedding area. He'd only went, like I said, 17 yards, which was nice. So I didn't disturb anything getting him out of there. I put him on my bike cart and just took him right out. And I had it was the same typical as usual. I had pictures of the same bucks for a couple days. And then I didn't see any more bucks in there until the end of October. Bucks started showing up again and kind of doing the same pattern they do every year to show up for a couple days, kind of see what's going on with the does and then move on about their business. But I have not seen the 7 in there since, and I haven't seen that 9 on the camera.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, have you done anything to the bedding area? I mean, have you, you know, cut trees or hinge cut trees or done anything, or you've just kind of let it go wild?
I kind of let it go wild. It was originally an old cornfield in there, so there was a lot of immature growth. It wasn't a lot of big trees, because the whole top of the hill was a cornfield prior, so there wasn't a lot of big trees. And then it was just like grass and things like that growing up in there, and there's a lot of vines and things. I had cut, like hinge cut a few trees, but there were some deadfalls in there too that really helped a good bit. And there was actually old pasture fence and things like that in there. And I had went down in and opened up some sections of that so they could kind of move through a little easier than what they were. But it's just, you would have to crawl on your hands and knees to get through some parts of it now. It's just grown up that much.
Okay. Cool.
Yep.
Now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the state of Maryland. You know, as I told you earlier, I shot a good buck in the state of Maryland myself 8 or 9 years ago, and I realized when I was hunting there that, man, this place is kind of a hidden jewel. Not that, you know, people are going to just flock to Maryland because it's a small place, and there definitely isn't a booner behind every tree.
Right.
But it is kind of a cool place that guys could consider going, and hunting with an outfitter there, as I learned hunting there, is a lot more reasonable than a lot of other places in the country, and you can kill a 140 to, you know, 160 buck there pretty consistently, and you even mentioned a couple 200 inchers that have come out of Maryland in recent years.
Yeah, definitely. Our good deer, what I would consider a good deer, is a deer in the 140, 150 inch range. If you're seeing a 3.5, 4.5 year old deer that's got that nice mass, why, you know what I mean, getting in the 140s and 150s, that's definitely not unheard of in the state of Maryland. And like I was telling you, there was a 199 killed in Kent County, which is up near Delaware, up on the upper eastern shore. And then it's in southern Maryland back in 2013, there was a 268 and 1/8 killed down in southern Maryland. And then in Cecil County back in, I think 2013. So the one down in southern Maryland in Charles was 2006. And then 2013, there was a really nice one, a 223 killed in Cecil County, which is the county that's next to where I am. So you're talking about three totally different places in the state where these 200 inch deer have been shot. And the eastern shore is just phenomenal. There's a lot of swampland down there, a lot of places where deer can hide, and there's really good outfitters you can get hooked up with. And then we also have, I don't know if you've seen them, but they're Sika deer. They're like a little miniature elk. And we have them on the eastern shore, which is, it can be some really hardcore hunting, but there's some really good public land down in there in the Blackwater Refuge and places like Fishing Bay and stuff. And then there's clubs guys belong to. And these are like a really elusive, neat thing that you can only hunt in wild in the state of Maryland. And I'm not sure if there are other places, but we have some on Astigue Island, which is over by where Ocean City and the shoreline there is. And then in Blackwater and Dorchester County is this huge concentration of these Sika deer that people can come hunt at a reasonable price too. I mean, you can come here and, like you said, for a couple hundred dollars a day, whether you want to do a 3-day hunt or a 5-day hunt and come hunt whitetails in the 140 and 150 range or even bigger. Or get yourself on a Sika deer hunt. And we have excellent waterfowl with Maryland's Chesapeake Bay for a really small state, a state that's, like I was telling you before, is 9,800 square miles of land and 2,600 square miles of water. There's always tons of stuff for us to do in the state of Maryland, 365 days a year, whether we're turkey hunting or you can draw a bear tag out in Western Maryland and bear hunt. We have really good turkey hunting on the eastern shore and in Western Maryland. And, you know, some of the counties like Harford, where I'm at, and Baltimore County and Cecil County, and guys are killing more and more turkeys in those areas too. And even on public land in some of the reservoirs, there's a Pretty Boy Reservoir where you could public land hunt. There's a pretty good concentration of turkeys in there. So we have all different kinds of things you can come hunt in the state of Maryland, all within a couple hours driving distance of each other.
Cool. Now, do you think gaining access, you're talking about, you know, You lease some land, and the cool thing is, in some cases, leasing land is pretty reasonable. How is the residents of Maryland when it comes to the idea of hunting? I mean, can you knock on someone's door and gain access, or is that really difficult?
I think it's difficult. I think a lot of the private land that's really good, guys have locked down and been hunting there for years. And if you do find somebody like a farmer or something that will let you go on their land, you almost got to contend with, it's almost like hunting a public land situation in this area where you're going to run into a lot of other people. Because it seems like some of the guys who are just going to, right off the bat, give you permission to come in, they're probably giving permission to a lot of people as well. So a lot of the farmers are kind of leasing land. They'll lease their whole farm to someone like me, where we pay a couple thousand dollars or something like that, which I really like. I mean, you're never going to keep all the deer on 200 acres or 300 acres. They're going to move off of it, but at least you can get it set up the way you want, kind of manage it the way you want. You're not getting in a situation where you have everything set up and then you don't know who the guy's giving permission to next to come up in there and kind of disturb maybe what you have going on. So as far as leasing goes, you can lease land pretty cheap. And as far as I'm concerned, it seems to be the best route to go. There is some good public land in certain areas. A lot of the public land in the more suburban areas, like the reservoirs and things like that you can hunt, they probably get hunted pretty heavy. But I'll tell you what, if you're not scared to go off the beaten path and get back in there and do your homework, there's a lot of good deer that comes out of those spots as well. There's a lot of guys that know how to hunt that public land and they'll get back in little holes where other guys don't want to walk too far from the truck and kind of get back in there and are able to kill some really nice bucks.
You know, and the cool thing about Maryland is, I mean, there's high concentration of people in the states all around Maryland, and Maryland's not that far of a drive. So, you know, for people in Pennsylvania and other areas out east like that, it can be a great place to go.
Definitely. It's its own hidden gem. Like I said, there's tons of things to do here in the outdoors, 365 days a year. And we have really good deer, great waterfowl hunting and great fishing and things like that, that you can come to the state of Maryland and do it. It's very easy to find an outfitter or even do a DIY hunt and get on, like I said, those seek a deer down on the Eastern Shore there. It's a really big thing that guys from out of state like to try to come do, from New Jersey and New York, Delaware and things like that. Kind of like to do a DIY thing up in Blackwater Refuge and hunt these elusive sick of deer.
Cool. Now, are you still whitetail hunting yourself?
Yes. I like waterfowl.
How many buck tags do you have in the state of Maryland?
Well, now we have three. It used to be a little too much back years prior. It probably got a little out of hand because used to be you could kill a buck with your bow or archery equipment, a buck with your muzzleloader, and then one during gun season. So that was three deer. And then you could get three bonus tags, one bonus tag for each of those. So you could technically kill six antlered bucks back years ago. And then what they did, they changed that a couple years back, and they made that you could shoot one with archery, one during muzzleloader, and one during gun season, and then one bonus deer one bonus buck tag that you could use in any of those seasons. So if you shot one with your bow, you could still use your bonus tag to shoot one with the bow. So that took it down to four. Now this year they changed it and took it down one more, which I think is going to help the buck population. And you can kill two bucks with any weapon. And then there's one bonus tag. So if you shoot one with your bow and then one with your muzzleloader, you would have to use that bonus tag during gun season or vice versa. But you can kill technically two on your license, only one per season. And then as far as the bonus tag goes, you could use that in any season. So you have two buck tags, but you can't just right off the bat shoot two bucks during bow season. You would have to use your bow tag and then that bonus tag. And then give you one tag left to use during like muzzleloader or gun season.
The cool thing is, I mean, you've drastically reduced tags, so Maryland could get better and better over the next few years.
Definitely. And see, I think that's what's going to help the deer population, the buck population, and make these guys think a little bit. Like back when you could kill six of them, it probably wasn't anything for a guy to pull the trigger on a 2.5-year-old 8-point. Whereas now, when they don't have as many tags, they're going to think a little bit, you know what I mean, before they burn that tag, and hopefully burn it on something that's a little bit more mature and a little bit better deer.
Sure. Absolutely.
If you're patient, and you let those smaller ones go, the big ones are definitely around. Like we were just talking about, the 140s and 150s are definitely here. It's not unheard of to shoot one.
Well, maybe in a few years we'll be talking to you about a 170 or 180 if the restrictions help a little bit.
Yep, definitely. I've seen some of the other states, like Pennsylvania has put antler restrictions on, and Missouri, you have to have 4 on one side to shoot it. And that doesn't pertain to the youth hunt, which is good because our youth season's really good to get kids involved in things like that. And the youth weekend actually just passed. Some counties you can hunt on Sundays, and some it's just Saturday, depending on where you're at. But the youth season falls right in that kind of the second, third week of the rut going on. So it's a real good time to get a kid out and possibly shoot, like you say, anywhere from 140 all the way up to 70s or even bigger.
Cool. Well, congratulations, you know, on your monster buck for the area. And man, that's awesome to kill one in velvet for sure. I mean, a lot of guys never kill a deer in velvet. And so that's very cool. And good luck with the rest of your hunting season.
Thank you. And I'll be putting the episode up on lethalinjectionoutdoors.com soon of the self-filmed hunt. And I got some more episodes coming up too. I probably should be putting more than I actually do, but I'm out here trying to hunt at the same time I'm trying to edit and do other things. So hopefully y'all can check that out.
At least you have your priorities straight, right?
Definitely.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. It's been nice talking to you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Wayne's story is proof that you don't have to be managing a large piece of property to kill a good buck. I want to thank everyone for listening, and if you'd like to try a pack of Grim Reaper broadheads, the first few guys that go to my website, tracybreen.com, which is TracyBreen.com, and shoot me an email, I'm going to give away a couple packs of broadheads. I'd also appreciate it if on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, just give me a positive review. Next week, we're going to have a gentleman on the show who also killed a really good buck in velvet. So a couple velvet episodes back to back. Until next week, have a great day.